Hello everyone, I'm Drew.
I'm Bailey.
I'm Lacey.
And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister. I was really hoping that you would introduce yourself with the names that I
oh,
gave.
Oh, I'm sorry. Aww. Oh, shit.
You want to try
I'm
again?
Dr. Sure.
Hello, everyone. I'm Drew, Lady of the House.
I'm Dr. Amanda Lick, PhD, Doctor of Tongue Stuff.
I'm Silly Willy, Lady of Willis.
She sounds ridiculous for Lacey.
I think I should introduce mine the other way around. I should say, I'm Lady of Willis. Please call me Silly Willy. Don't change how it's written. I like how it's written. Lady Silly Willy. No, it's too much.
Okay.
I'm Lady of Willis. Silly Willy is what I go by.
So I discovered today that I have the power to change the names of everybody in this little chat. So everybody has a name and a title. And I feel really good about it.
We shouldn't have told anybody. We should have told them if they want to know what they are. Come in the Patreon so they can watch our videos. Well, next week, tune in to see what our new names are. Drew, you've got a week to figure them out.
Yeah, I think I'm going to keep like on theme where Bailey gets a ridiculous name and Lacey gets a silly name.
Oh, okay.
Why do I get bullied the hardest?
Because you're the toughest.
Why do you think that is?
I'm the silliest.
Because Lacey is fragile.
Okay, great. Well, thanks.
I'm Silly Willy.
Oh, boy. All right. So it's my episode today.
Wait, no, I have something fun to share.
Oh, okay.
And I just shared the link in the group chat, too. You guys know, have you seen American Horror Story?
Mm-hmm.
I've tried watching the first season, and then I got confused how every season is like its own thing.
A different
I don't
thing.
Know. Yeah.
Kind of
so have
it.
You ever heard of the Lowry Mansion?
The what?
In New Orleans, the Lowry Mansion.
Which season? What was the story for that?
It was I believe it was the witches.
Some.
It
okay.
was but it told about the slave owner that would like had a torture chamber in her like
okay.
top floor.
Yeah. Was this the house?
So yeah, that's a real person. It's a real house. It's haunted as fuck. I'll probably cover it in our next Disturbing Destinations episode. But the house is for sale.
I was gonna say, it seems to be for sale.
And it's only $10.2 million.
Guys,
well,
if
to
we
be
put
fair,
our funds together.
So to be fair, it's like right in the French Quarter. Like I've passed it a bunch of times when I've been in New Orleans. It's 3 stories, it's gorgeous. Inside is insane though.
It has double parlors.
Yeah. Supposedly Nick Cage owned it at one point.
Well, yeah, it's got 8 bedrooms, perfect for all his children.
He has a lot of kids.
Oh, not Nick Cage. Who am I thinking of?
Cannon.
Nick Cannon.
Yeah, that one.
And he has more than 8 kids.
No, I know, but like, they can double
Sometimes
up.
Sometimes you gotta double them up when you've got double-digit kids.
Yeah, he's got like 12 kids, but you're not moving into a 3-bedroom, 2-bath with 12 kids.
Speaking of 12 kids, so I watch Selling Sunset or whatever, and one
Are
of
we
his
all
baby
done with this mansion? Are we
yes.
moving on to a new topic? Okay.
Yeah. And one of the baby mamas is, she's a realtor on Selling Sunset on Netflix. Really fun show. It's a reality TV show. And she said that, at least in California, after you have 10 kids, like, you tap out a child support.
I think that's a thing.
Which is,
in,
but like,
I think there's like
no.
a rule like that in every state.
That's not fair. That's bullshit.
I mean,
more than
why
10?
Why are you having so many kids with somebody that needs to be paying child support?
I think for someone who can obviously afford it, he should be paying for all of them.
I'm of two minds with that because I do agree with that, but I also think if you're going to have a baby with somebody who has kids in double digits, you should maybe make better choices about having
Well,
kids
I
with
think,
somebody.
Lacey, I think it means like if, for example, if Lewis and I had 10 kids and then we had an 11th kid and then we got divorced, he would only have to pay child support for 10 of them. It's not like if I have 5 kids with this person and then 6 over here, he doesn't
No,
have to pay.
it's
It's
just in
he
the
still has to pay
one
for his
family.
kids. He still has to, like, you're only responsible for your own kids.
Fair.
Do you know how child
Yeah.
works? Watch Judge Judy.
No. Watch fuck. What's her
Starring
name?
Peltzer?
Judge Von
Joe
DeBeat.
Brown? Yes,
She's
yes.
on TikTok. She's a
She
she's
tears them
amazing.
up.
She's in Texas, and some people are so fucking dumb. Anyway,
Are
enough
we
of the
ready?
chit chat. I think we should get into it.
All right.
And what do you got for us?
Well, let me get the pictures ready. I am going to be telling you guys. So I was torn about what to call this episode because there's a lot going on. But we're just going to call it the Murder of Jerry Boggs.
Okay. Do we
Okay.
like Jerry?
Do we like Jerry?
Yeah.
Well, Jerry gets murdered, so I was gonna say I hope so, but also I don't want to like the person who gets murdered, you know? But I bet we will. That's my guess. We'll find out. Let's let Drew tell us.
You,
Lacey, you had that murder case that was like the whole town hated him and all killed him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So,
shit.
like,
What
not
was his
everyone that
name?
gets murdered is sad.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I feel like it was Kenneth something.
I can't believe I can't remember. Every once in a while, I'll just think about him and how everybody saw him get murdered, but like nobody saw
Never mind. We're not going to get into it because we're
it.
talking about something else. But I was going to say, like, why did everybody hate him so much? But if
Yeah, he
you
did all
want to
kinds of shit.
know, go
Go
back and
back.
listen to the episode.
It was Ken
It is,
Rex McElroy.
yes, episode 7.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah.
wow.
The baby podcast.
It was the same cast.
Yeah,
I
I was
was
going
going
to
to
say,
say,
not much has
the
changed since then.
baby pod.
All right. So, Gerald.
He looks like a fun grandpa.
Oh.
Looks like he goes bird watching.
Oh, I was going to say because of the binoculars around his neck, but no,
Those are
those are glasses.
sunglasses, but I
Yeah.
also thought they were binoculars.
So, Gerald Boggs was born May 27th, 1941. He was a Gemini. He lived in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, all his life. Gerald's parents, Harold and Sylvia Boggs, had one other son, Douglas. Jerry, as he was known to his friends and family, graduated from high school in 1959. He went on to graduate from University of Colorado in 1964, majoring in political science and minoring in Russian language. In the fall of 1963, Jerry enlisted in the Army. 2 years later, Jerry was sent to Vietnam. A year later, Jerry was sent home on a 30-day furlough. And in the fall of 1967, Jerry was discharged from the Army and was awarded the Bronze Star for his service. That's a little background on Jerry.
Jenny.
After returning home, Jerry began working in the family store. It was called Boggs Hardware and had been located on Main Street in Steamboat Springs since 1959. Jerry was a full-time employee and part owner of the store. In his free time, he began training as a pilot while also working as a guest tour guide for the Museum of Natural History. Jerry enjoyed anthropology and archaeology. He also enjoyed scuba diving and undersea and outdoor photography. So he probably also enjoyed bird watching because pictures. Jerry was a caring person. Those who knew him felt, quote, "You could trust him with your life. He was everyone's Uncle Jerry." So everybody's called him Uncle Jerry.
He's Grandpa Jerry.
Okay. I mean, he died when he was like 52, so it's not really
I mean, you could be a grandpa.
fair, I suppose.
You mean you suppose?
I don't know. He didn't have any kids, so anyway. On October 22nd, 1993, Doug became concerned because Jerry hadn't shown up for work. Remember, Doug is his brother. Jerry had a routine. He did the same thing every day, so him not showing up was very troubling. Doug went to Jerry's house to check on him, only to find him on the floor inside the back door. Jerry had been shot to death. Nearby, there was a bloody shovel and a plastic bag. The doors were unlocked, which was not unusual, and no valuables were missing from Jerry's home.
It seems sad.
Yeah. So this is like Steamboat Springs,
Wow.
right? Beautiful. If I was born there, I probably wouldn't leave either.
Wouldn't really.
What is
Because
that near?
this is
Never
his
mind.
store. It is near.
I'm looking it up. It's fine.
Oh, perfect. So then I can keep going through the photos. That's
Yes, that's
him.
why I said never mind.
When the police arrived, Doug kept telling them, quote, "That bitch killed my brother." Investigators found
Huh.
no Yeah. Investigators found
Okay.
no DNA or foreign fibers. Police spoke to neighbors and found that prior on the day of the murder, neighbors saw two suspicious-looking men walking near the house. But who was Doug talking about? Who is the bitch that killed his brother?
Who is the
I'm
bitch
sure
who killed his
I
brother?
was gonna say, I'm
You
sure that's
know?
who you were wondering. What you were wondering.
Could you
So
imagine
let
if she just ended it there?
Yes.
He
The
dun dun
end.
dun.
So I'm
It's a
gonna introduce
mini
you now
episode.
to the just I'm gonna call her a hot mess. Hot
Ooh.
mess Jill Coit.
Is that the bitch that killed his brother?
You
Jill?
know, hold on. I
Yeah.
just want to say, in the first photo to the left, she's got something. She's got like an evil or like not an
She looks a little
evilness, like
crazy.
craziness in the eyes. You know when people are like,
You
oh,
can
you
see
have
it in
like a
the
twinkle
eyes.
in your eye? Yeah, she's got a she's
Crazy.
got a craziness to her eyes.
I'm not going to comment on that, but we will
Okay.
see
I
if
feel like your
you
future
are hurt.
comments will comment on that.
So, what is happening with my screen?
It's not
Lacey
doing
is
anything
all
on
of a
my
sudden
end.
very big. There we go. Okay.
Oh.
Okay, so Jill Coit was renovating a bed and breakfast with her sons in Steamboat Springs. She would regularly visit Boggs Hardware to get supplies. That's where she met Jerry. Soon after, they started dating, and when Jill became pregnant with Jerry's child, she and Jerry got married in 1991. Family and friends could not.
I thought you said Jerry didn't have kids.
I did, yes.
But she got pregnant.
I'm going to move on. Family and friends could not understand what Jerry saw in Jill. They didn't think Jerry really loved her, but married her because she was pregnant. They thought Jill married him for his money. Doug, his brother, felt Jill's interest in Jerry's finances was excessive. Jerry's friends and family thought Jill was the strangest person, describing her as off the wall and not at all suited for Jerry.
I'd like to say that we pegged that with one photo. Did he make a lot of money with a hardware store?
I mean, he owned his own business, so.
But like, how often are you running to a hardware store?
It was the 90s. So, like, I don't know. When did Lowe's and Home Depot become popular? I don't know. He had enough money for her to want to marry him, and then there's a loan that we talk about in two paragraphs.
Lowe's was started in 1921.
That doesn't seem right.
And Home Depot 1978.
Lowe's was that far ahead of Home Depot?
Yeah. It started by Lucas Lowe in Wilkesboro, North Carolina, as a small hardware store.
Oh, and look at how they're doing now.
Yeah.
Their marriage was brief. Jerry had it annulled after... So I've seen it in two different... Like, I've done my research, and I cannot determine whether they were... The marriage was annulled after 7 days or 7 months. I will say Forensic Files said 7 days, but everywhere I saw online said months. But I thought it was weird to, like, I feel like after months, it's a divorce. It's not an annulment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like Forensic Files wouldn't say something and put it on TV without being super duper sure.
Let's Google what's the difference.
I'm going to move on while you do that.
An annulment declares marriage null and void as if it never existed. They can be based on legal grounds.
That it may have been annulled, regardless of how long it was, because the reason he moved for an annulment was he found out that she was still technically married to her previous husband.
Oh. Yeah, that's probably it.
Following the annulment, Jerry and Jill barely spoke. Jill began a campaign to discredit and disparage Gerald's good name. She told anyone who would listen that Jerry was a horrible person who kicked her and their baby out.
What baby?
Their baby. But this was not the only reason for bad blood between Jill and Jerry. During their week of marriage, Jerry loaned Jill $100,000 to put towards her B&B. Jerry filed a civil suit against Jill. The suit became very contentious. The case was scheduled to go to trial in Rout County District Court on October 27th, 1993. Do you remember when Doug found Jerry's body?
Yes, he said that bitch killed my brother.
No, on
October 22nd.
I just thought you said, like, do you remember that he found him? No. October 22nd.
Yes, and the case was set to go to court on October 27th.
It's a hell of a coincidence.
Mm-hmm. It's important to note that Steamboat Springs was a small town, so everyone knew everyone's, like, all the tea. They knew all of it, which added to the issues between Jerry and Jill. He was very embarrassed. With all of this, like, I mean, he probably felt that he was tricked into a marriage because she was already married. And then she took a bunch of money from him and a little bit more that I will tell you about right now. Around that time, Jerry caught Jill lying about her birthday. Jerry was suspicious about her, so he asked his friend and private investigator, Judy Pryor Lewis, to look into Jill. And Judy did... I honestly don't think she needed to do much digging, but she found so much dirt. Are you ready for this?
So ready. I'm so ready.
Okay.
Tell us the dirt. So,
let me see. I'm going to go back to here so that you can look at her while I tell you all of her dirt. Jill was born Jill Lunita Billiott on June 11th, 1943 in Lafitte, Louisiana.
Lunita. Spicy.
She told Jerry she was born in 1944. So she lied about the year. She grew up in New Orleans with an unremarkable upbringing. She had a younger brother named Mark, whom she always resented. When she was 15, she moved to Indiana to live with relatives. Jill had been a model and beauty queen. Judy found that Jill had 3 social security cards, 4 birth certificates, and at least 15 aliases going back 25 to 30 years, as well as, ready for it, a slew of husbands.
Oh. Were the husbands alive?
Some of them.
I think that's one too many birth certificates.
You think it's one too many? She's got 4.
Yeah, at least.
You need options, but, like, not too many.
Yeah, it's like picking out your outfit for the day. Like, who do you want to be this year?
Customize your character.
Exactly. It's like Sims.
But she's got four birth certificates and three social security cards. Do you think they're overlapping at all, or
That's
do you
why
think
it's
she's
one
just
too
like,
many birth certificates.
oh.
See,
Bailey,
that's what I
big head.
meant.
Yes.
Thank
Or one
you.
too few socials. Yeah.
That's the weird part. Well, maybe she's waiting on the new social
They do
security
take a
card.
while.
They take a really long time.
In 1961, she married her first husband, Larry Inhen, when she was 18. Larry was an apprentice bricklayer. Their marriage lasted a little less than a year and ended with Jill liquidating their shared bank account and moving back to Louisiana.
Sure.
That's not cool.
Back in Louisiana, Jill started school at Northwestern University of Louisiana. While taking acting classes at school, she met fellow student Steve Moore, and they married in 1964. Together, they had a son named Stephen Seth Moore, whom they called Seth. But they split before Seth's first birthday. Following that separation, Jill moved to Texas and married William Clark Coit Jr. in January 1966. William was an engineer and was unfazed by Jill's baggage. He adopted Seth and had two sons of his own with Jill. They were named William Andrew Coit, and they called him Andrew. In November 1966, and William Clark Coit the third in March 1968. So both his sons are named William. Yes, Bailey. Yes, that's what. Yes, both of them are named William. The older
It
one goes by the
also,
middle name.
side note, she, because her first son went by his middle name too, correct?
Yes.
Why don't you just name them that middle name then?
That's what I always say.
This is what I think, because Stephen Seth Moore was born to Jill and Stephen Moore. So I think that he needed to be named after
Oh.
his dad, but then they're not going to call him both Steve.
I'm not gonna, okay.
Annoying.
When you explain it that way, that makes sense, 'cause if
No.
Pat and I ever have a boy,
That's what
he
you're going to
wants,
do, yeah.
yeah, he wants a junior, and I'm not calling Pat twice, so.
Yeah, there you go. Why don't you just say my middle name?
Fuck off! It's
Just name
different.
all your sons Patrick.
No.
All
Following the
Patricks will
birth.
get middle names.
So, following the birth of Andrew, the first son, Jill finally divorced Stephen Moore in March 1967. A little out of order of how you
Nice of
should
her.
do things. Yeah.
She's going through a lot.
Yeah, I mean, she'd already remarried and had a baby with her new husband, but
She had to make sure it was gonna last.
that's right. You don't want to like give up on one
Don't
thing before
waste
you
your
know
time.
for sure. Yeah.
Exactly. Fair.
But by 1972, Jill was spending her husband's money and having affairs, so William filed for divorce and custody of their children. Jill hired Louis DeRosa as her attorney. 3 weeks before the divorce was finalized in March 1972, William was fatally shot twice in the back by an apparent intruder.
An
Jill,
apparent intruder?
what a run of bad luck for her.
She can't catch a break.
Oh, guys, it gets so
Off.
much worse. Jill was initially suspected,
Oh!
but the police could never find sufficient evidence to charge her.
Right.
So Jill quickly traveled to New Orleans and checked herself into a psychiatric hospital to avoid further questioning.
Because that doesn't look suspicious at all.
She was suffering. She was
From guilt?
treated. She was treated for acute hysteria and emotional distress.
From guilt?
From being suspected, I think.
That's super traumatic, especially when you're obviously guilty.
Yes, I
It
don't
weighs
want
on the soul.
Boy, does it.
You know?
I don't know.
Okay.
I just wanted to say something while I was changing the font. It's getting because
Why is the
your
font so important?
well
Oh, that font.
your names were blocking your faces, so it was hard to focus.
It's almost like you shouldn't have like given us like long ass fucking names.
Well,
Speak for yourself.
yeah. Lady
Lady
of
of
Willis
Willis
liked
deserves
it.
recognition.
William's murder is still unsolved. So,
Crazy.
after leaving the hospital in 1973, Jill moved to California with her three sons. There, she persuaded Bruce Johansson, a man in his 90s, to adopt her and subsequently inherited a large portion of his estate after his death. Yes, Bailey.
How old was she?
Oh, 30.
And she got adopted?
Yes. I don't think I saw somewhere that it said unofficially adopted her, so I think that he was just like, "You're my daughter now," and left her a large portion of his estate in his will.
Can I get one of those?
Find a 9-year-old man and be skeevy. Following Bruce's death, Jill married U.S. Marine Corps Major Donald Charles Brody. 2 years later, they divorced, and Jill and her sons moved back to Louisiana. After the divorce, Jill told Donald that she was pregnant, provided a birth certificate, and began collecting child support. Later, she told Donald that the baby had died. But there were no signs the child ever existed, with the birth certificate proving to be fake.
Is that one of the
Interesting.
birth certificates she had?
Maybe. Could be. Maybe. Because she's got three sons. No, it wouldn't have been like of note if they were just like legitimate birth certificates. I think they were all. Moving on to her next husband. Are you counting how many we've hit?
That was
No.
three.
No. William
Five.
Clark. William Clark Quaid was number three. And then Donald Charles Brody was number four. So in 1976, Jill married her fifth husband, Louis DeRosa. Do you remember him?
No.
There've been a lot of
He was,
men.
yes, he was her lawyer.
Oh. Oh, Lewis.
They married in Mississippi, and in 2 years later, in
Mississippi?
19, huh?
Sorry, go ahead. Keep going.
2 years later, in 1978, Lewis and Jill separated. During the separation, Jill moved to Ohio and married Eldon Duane Metzger.
It's like someone who's like her lawyer and like who like knows like
The law.
significant things and like probably has like handled all of her divorces. Like, why?
I would like to say that she has a tendency to lie to everyone.
True, and she seems to be able to convince all of these men to marry her, so she is good at manipulation.
She's the doctor of tongue stuff, not me.
Icky.
No.
She, oh, that's too far. She's getting all
Yeah.
these fucking
Too
men.
far.
You're telling me it's
So,
all just what's coming
her,
out of her mouth?
I feel yucky.
Her marriage to Eldon was brief, but the date of divorce is unknown. In November of 1978, Jill and Lewis finally divorced in Haiti. However, the divorce was not legally recognized by the United States. So I would just like you to understand,
They divorced in Haiti.
she had a marriage Oreo. She was married to Lewis. They separated. She was still married to Lewis, so she got married to somebody else, divorced that other person, and then divorced Lewis. Like it was a marriage Oreo.
That's not a thing.
It shouldn't be, but Jill made it possible.
Seems that it is.
In 1983, Jill married a prep school teacher in Indiana named Carl Steely. only to divorce him 11 months later. However, the divorce was in Haiti again, so not legal.
What number are we at?
I think we're on number 7.
Okay.
So,
why does she keep going to Haiti for divorce?
Honestly, I don't know. Never saw any explanation for
that. You know how people like honeymoon after their wedding, or they like...
They went on vacation, and she was like, you know what? It's not
we
working.
We should get divorced here.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful place.
So, in 1985, nearly 10 years later, Jill finally, legally divorced Louis DeRosa in New Orleans. Which brings us to 1991, when Jill married Jerry. So, she's divorced from everyone else except Carl Steely. They got divorced in Haiti, so it's not legally recognized by the United States. But yeah. And so, like, at first I thought maybe she didn't understand that the divorce wasn't going to be recognized by the U.S. But that was with, like, the first, she divorced Louis in Haiti and then divorced him in real life. And then, so she should have known about Carl. Maybe she was confused because there's so many of them.
Or maybe she did it on purpose so she could still, like, be, like, tied to them or, like, have, like, access to their assets or something.
I honestly think that she just didn't give a shit.
I mean, there's that, too.
She couldn't be bothered, is how I felt about it.
She's juggling, like, 8 or 10 men. It's hard.
Mm-hmm. And she's, 3 kids.
She takes playing the field to the next level.
True. So after Jill and Jerry had their marriage annulled, Jill finally legally divorced Carl Steely.
Single at that point.
Right. She's super duper single. In 1992, Jill met Michael Backus. Jill and Michael lived together in Greeley, Colorado, but were never married.
Maybe Shocking. That's a good thing.
The final thing, so this is all what Judy found out. Because Jerry was like, hey, Judy, can you, like, look into Jill? She lied about her birthday, and I want to know what else she's lying about before we go to court. And Judy was like, I got you. And then she, like, did a little Googling and found out all of this. But the last thing that she found out that she told Jerry was that Jill lied about being pregnant with Jerry's baby. She had had a hysterectomy years prior to meeting Jerry. So, no baby. Judy told Jerry about the marriages, the bigamies, and the hysterectomy. Judy said that Jerry laughed about the marriage stuff, but didn't want to believe his baby was fake. I think he was really looking forward to being a father, and he was just a little in denial about it. But Judy said that he was like, of course she's been married 8 times. So,
a sentence I've never heard before. Well, said so nonchalantly. Of
she
course.
Was so good at the tongue stuff.
So after
I thought you said it was icky.
It is. That's why nobody said anything. So after
I think it's
the police
funny.
Became aware of the motives, they questioned Jill. She provided an alibi for the night of October 21st. She said she had been camping at the Poudre National Park. It was located 150 miles away from Jerry's home.
Right.
She had been
right.
with Michael Backus, who corroborated the alibi. The Arapahoe County coroner did the autopsy and found that Jerry had been beaten with the shovel, then shot twice in the chest with either a 22 or a 25 caliber pistol. I've seen it both ways. I didn't think it really mattered. There was blunt trauma to the head from the shovel and bruises, forming a pattern injury on Jerry's face and neck. Based on the liver temperature and rigor mortis, Jerry had been killed between 1 p.m. on Thursday, October 21st, and 3:30 p.m. on Friday, October 22nd. Which seems like a crazy big window.
Yes.
The window is over 24 hours.
Yeah, that's a wide, a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah, I don't know if the, I'm not gonna. I was gonna say, I don't know if the coroner really w went off of liver temp and rigor mortis, more so just saying, when did everybody last see him? Okay. And when did we find him? Gotcha. All right.
Between then and then, for sure.
Yeah.
That narrows it down.
Investigators determined that his shovel used was very old with porous wood. Because of this, DNA should have been present on the handle, but there was none, leading investigators to determine the attacker was wearing gloves. Even though Jill had an alibi, police still considered her their main suspect. Other than the massive amount of motive, William Clark Coit Jr. had been murdered with the same weapon as Jerry. Two shots with the same caliber pistol.
Interesting.
And both William and Jerry were preparing to take Jill to court when they were murdered. Remember?
Seems kind of convenient.
So investigators really wanted to narrow down that time of death window.
Right.
'Cause 20, like, it's.
Yeah, it's not helpful.
So during the autopsy, Jerry's stomach contents included potatoes and onions. They were going to use this to try and narrow down the window. Because Jerry lived a very routine life, his activities on the day of his death were not a mystery. Every day, I want you guys to pay attention to this because it's a little crazy.
Okay.
Every day, Jerry opened the family store at 10 a.m. He worked for a bit, then went down the street to a cafe for breakfast. Feels like maybe lunch, but no, breakfast. He ate the same meal every day, eggs, toast, and hash browns. But where did the onions come from? A
Lunch.
detect no. A detective stood in the kitchen and watched the cook prepare the meals. The cook used the same spatula to cook everything on his flat top, cross-contaminating and getting onion bits in the hash browns.
I would be so mad.
Yeah, me too. I remember when Bailey and I used to work at the same retirement community, and there was a man that lived there, a resident, who was allergic to onions.
Well, I
So,
feel like you gotta, especially at a place that does breakfast stuff, you're gonna have onions all over the place.
I know, but like the detectives were like, how did he get, like, where did the onions come from? And they were like, meh, we don't put onions in the hash browns. So the detective was like, I'm gonna stand in the kitchen and watch you.
Why don't you just have two spatulas?
Because two is too many.
When I worked at Red Robin, they actually pride themselves on being like super like allergy conscious, and it actually came in a purple case, like an own cutting board, a specific knife, specific spatula for specific like really bad allergies. So, but like if he's cross-contaminating with onions and like potatoes, is he cross-contaminating with like chicken and beef?
Maybe. Hard to
That's really
say.
gross.
So anyway, this confirmed that breakfast had been Jerry's last meal, meaning he was killed a few hours after he ate. Additionally, police found a Girl Scout had knocked on Jerry's door at approximately 4 p.m., but no
Did he
one
get
answered the
cookies?
door,
Aww.
even though Jerry's car was in the garage. So this helped police narrow down the window of when Jerry was likely murdered. Now, this made things interesting because Jill only had an alibi for the evening, not the afternoon.
Ooh,
But that's
Jill.
not enough evidence to convict. So they got a warrant to search Jill's car inside her Toyota Passio. Is that how you say that, Bailey?
Don't know. I've actually never like pronounced that car.
Anyway, inside her car, they found wigs, a stun gun, and maps of Mexico.
To Mexico.
She's going on a trip.
Police wondered if Jill could have been one of the strangers seen walking near Jerry's house on the day of his murder, just in disguise.
Nah, that doesn't sound like Jill.
Not Jill.
I know Jill. That doesn't sound
Yeah.
like her.
I want to see. I'm remembering. something. I'm gonna see if I can find it real quick. Oh no. I'll show it to you later if I find it, come across it. But there's a picture. Anyway, they also wondered if the pattern injuries on Jerry's face and neck could have been caused by the stun gun. Investigators measured the distance between the electrodes and found that they lined up perfectly to the pattern injuries on Jerry.
He was hit with a stun gun in his face.
And neck.
Well, the neck is one thing, but the face?
Yeah, I think it's like his cheek.
Ow!
To confirm that the stun gun could have caused the injuries, they tested it on a deceased pig. The injuries were very similar, but they did confirm that Jerry was alive when he was tased because, like, I guess the bruising was different based on whether or not, I mean, obviously, if the blood is pumping, the bruising's going to be
Right.
different. So now investigators were really looking into Jill. They uncovered a photo of Jill the night of the murder where she was wearing a beard and mustache as disguise.
Picture.
Oh,
Picture of her in her murder disguise. Oh my
do you think
God.
she cut her hair short so that she could wear wigs? I just thought of that.
Probably, if you're gonna marry 12,000 men and play all these games, you might as well be wig ready all the time.
Wig ready?
In this one photo, that's when she was like in like the beauty contest or whatever. But then ever after that, all her hair was short.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened to her? What
Nothing.
is wrong with her?
So much.
Time to spice things up. With a
So
beard.
she had the photo had been taken of her in Steamboat Springs, where she said she wasn't,
Well, she's camping.
with a tall, slim man.
Is that husband number nine?
No, she didn't get married. I think
Oh,
she stopped after.
boyfriend?
Maybe. We'll see.
I feel like when you hit, side note, I
Next
feel like when
time.
you hit eight husbands, you shouldn't be allowed to have a marriage license anymore.
It's like the 10 kids thing.
Yeah, you're just done. It's your
Give up.
privileges has been revoked. You don't know how to use it.
So they also found no evidence that Jill signed in and paid the admission fee for the park that she claimed to be camping at. So originally, here's my only issue with the police. Originally, they said that she had a strong alibi for the night of his murder because she said that she was camping 150 miles away, and her boyfriend corroborated that story. They didn't check. They were just like, oh, okay.
Thank you for the information.
And then only after they started getting really suspicious of her did they go and check.
They're really good. She's really good with the tongue stuff, guys. Okay.
I think that it's because it was 150 miles away and they were like, meh.
That's far. You,
It's
but you
really
could
far.
call for that.
It was really far. I don't.
Okay.
The evidence that they had against Michael Backus, her boyfriend, included the fact that he bought new boots and cleaned his leather jacket after Gerald's death. So he bought new boots and then he took his leather jacket to be cleaned.
Maybe he just wanted it polished.
Exactly. Not a lot of evidence against him, I will say.
That seems kind of flimsy.
So when police went to arrest Jill and Michael, they discovered that they had skipped town. I don't know where they went. But because the map of Mexico, I'm gonna say Mexico.
No, they can't go to
Mexico.
Mexico because they don't know their directions now.
We skipped town in something.
They're gonna get lost to Mexico. They're gonna end up in Canada.
Well, eventually they did return to Colorado, where they were promptly arrested and charged with first-degree murder in December of 1993. During the preliminary hearing, the forensic specialist testified, and as he was leaving, Jill muttered, "Nice job," to him. She didn't say sarcastically, It was, he said that she got the that he got the impression that she was just like impressed with his work.
You know, it's always nice to feel appreciated in your job. Even if it's from the person that like you're trying to catch.
Jill and Michael's cases were joined, and the venue of the trial was changed from Rout County to Grand County due to publicity. Joseph Saint Veltri represented Jill, and Leonard Davies represented Michael. Davies spent mo much of the time trying to separate his client from Jill. This was because the vast majority of the evidence was related to Jill and not Michael.
Yeah.
So, like, I think his thought process was, if I can get them tried separately, his case will not hold up.
Or blame it all on Jill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, if you look at what they had against Michael, his shoes, his coat, and his association with Jill.
And the fact that, like, he lied about her alibi for her.
True.
Yeah, so good.
The trial began on February 6, 1995. The prosecution theorized that after work, Jerry arrived home shortly after 1 p.m. and was ambushed. Okay, so I'm sorry. He's a lovely man, but he opened the store at 10 a.m., left to have breakfast, and then went home at 1 p.m.
No.
He doesn't, maybe he doesn't do that every day. Maybe he had an appointment or something.
He's a very his day is very routine. That's why they were like, when he didn't show up the next day, they were like, where is he?
Well, so here's the other thing too. It's the 90s. It's a very like small town. That's maybe just the hours he wanted to keep, like
I know that he's the owner, but like
again, hardware isn't in that demand. Like, it was probably
Maybe
more expensive
those
to
are the
keep the
only
store
hours that
open
they didn't,
longer.
yeah, maybe those are the only hours that really get people.
I didn't say that he closed the store. He just went home. So maybe he had
Well,
other employees there.
yeah.
But like, what is his life? I wanna do that.
Why are you yelling at him? He went to Vietnam. He did a lot of, he got a star. You're coming at a war hero.
I'm not yelling. I'm jealous.
Well, don't have kids.
Is that the secret to only
He
working
didn't
4 hours
have kids. I guess so.
All right. Well, anyway, the attackers ambushed Jerry, used the stun gun and shovel to subdue him. The plastic bag was used in an attempt to suffocate him, and then they used the gun. During the trial, it was revealed that Jill began making plans to murder Jerry as early as the summer of 1993, so like 6 months in advance. She went as far as to solicit several people to come to Colorado and kill him. Bailey's making a face.
It's like, how dumb could you be?
When that is a thing that you can do.
Oh, she got fat.
The prosecution also had a surprise witness. Jill's son Seth testified against her.
Ooh, interesting.
What did Seth have to say?
Tell us.
Well, Jill called Seth after Jerry was murdered and said, quote, "It's over and it was messy." Seth believed his mother was referring to Mr. Boggs because she had previously told him that she wanted Gerald killed and discussed certain details related to the murder. As for motive, the state's theory was that Jill Coit felt her civil case with Gerald Boggs was becoming a liability. She was afraid the evidence related to her past would be brought out in trial. The trial lasted 6 weeks, and the jury took only 5 hours to find Jill and Michael Backus guilty of first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder on March 17, 1995. Both Jill and Michael were sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole, plus an extra 48 years for conspiracy in 1995, in May of 1995, by the Hot Sulphur Springs District Court. Once news spread that Jill had been arrested, another one of her sons, William, came forward with his suspicions that Jill had murdered his father and her third husband, William Coit. As far as I can tell, that's that where that ended. His murder is still unsolved, so.
Interesting.
In November 1997, Jill appealed her life sentence and lost. In May 1998, Jill posted on the internet that she's looking for a husband, but her post was removed by the Colorado Women's Correctional Institute.
Is there like an eHarmony for like probably prisons?
In December of 1998, Jill advertised on her own website called cyberspaceinmates.com.
Gave her her own website?
Who gave her a computer? She advertised she was offering to marry someone so that they could gain citizenship. So she was becoming kind of desperate. She was like, somebody marry me. She's like,
please give me a husband. Some people are not good at being single. Listen, some people...
That's a good point.
Are chronically looking for the next relationship.
In 2002, Jill filed a motion for a post-conviction relief of her charges, but it was denied. So she took to the internet asking people to call for an investigation regarding abuse and human rights violations against her that occurred in jail.
No.
She alleged that she was denied use of her back brace and wrist braces.
Well,
she also claimed that she was sexually abused and had her finger broken by a guard.
Good. Sorry.
About the finger breaking, right?
Worked out real fast.
I just want to know, like, why does she have internet access?
Why didn't she see if the guard wanted to marry her?
Probably she wanted a rich one.
I mean, they get steady income. She'd get perks, too, if she was married to a guard.
She was looking for somebody to help them gain citizenship. She wasn't looking for just a rich husband.
She was looking for that prince that emails everybody. Jill once said, quote, "I don't smoke or drink. I guess my greatest sin is that I get married." Jill Coit is currently serving her sentence at Denver Women's Correctional Facility.
Wasn't her greatest sin is getting married and not killing her husbands?
They died different. She didn't kill him.
Lacey, God. She only killed two husbands, but she was married 8 times. So,
I mean, what's the bigger good, sin? You know.
If loving someone is a sin, she doesn't want to be right, Lacey.
Also, I like that, I mean, yeah, murder's pretty bad, but also, like, bigamy. Did that a whole lot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? She loved being married so much, she could not bring herself to end those marriages. And then, you know, the next one started. Like, what are you going to do? Tell him? No.
You're going to break up a marriage? Okay. Hope
you don't get found out. That's my way of dealing with stressful situations. Confrontation, push it off.
Yeah. That's her problem. Her greatest sin is procrastination.
Mm-hmm.
About Michael Backus, in September 2003, he appealed his sentence, claiming to have had ineffective counsel. I think his main issue was that in 1995, he never took the stand to testify. Mm. That's what his like main issue was. Like, he was like, nobody wanted to hear from me.
I mean, sometimes that shoots you in the foot, though.
Yeah.
So
during his appeal in court in 2003, Nancy Holton, his new attorney, asked Michael if he killed Gerald. Michael replied, "No, I did not."
But was he there?
Ooh.
Michael said that he had been married to 5 women before he met Jill Coit, but he did not know about her past. He said that Jill was a private person who didn't share a lot of her past and said that she had deceived him. He said he only learned about Jill's past during the trial, and he said it was very difficult to sit through, which, if that's true, I can understand that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like you help this woman, your girlfriend, murder her husband, her ex-husband, and then in trial you find out this bitch has
It
eight.
wasn't even just her first husband, it was
No, she's
eight
had
before
eight
then.
ex-husbands. One of them died in very similar circumstances to number eight. She's got three kids. Like,
He said, "Damn it, it was the tongue stuff."
Imagine that ending in Catfish. Catfished.
Michael maintained that he and Jill had been camping during the murder, but he did state in court in 2003 that he now believes that Jill could have been involved in the murder. His theory is that she must have hired someone to commit the murder.
I
During
feel
pro
like he's just saying that so he can maintain that he was not
camping,
there.
and also he didn't lie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, we were camping, but like also like I didn't do anything. Like I didn't kill him. Yeah, you didn't. You were just there.
I like those pics.
He looks like Dwight.
He does. Wait, no, Moe's. With because of the
Yes.
beard, he looks like Moe's.
Yes.
He looks like Dwight and Moe's combined.
Oh my God.
During cross-examination, the ADA asked Michael why he bought new boots, a new tent, and had his jacket cleaned immediately after Jerry's murder. He also pointed out that other than Miss Coit, there is not a single other person that is alive today that can corroborate your story. Jill's attorney, Saint Veltri, testified, stating that the original trial was adversarial toward the defense. She said, quote, I think Mr. Backus may have had ineffective assistance of counsel. I don't attribute this to Mr. Davies, but to the trial. So, like, yeah.
Feel like when you're on trial, it's a little adversarial toward you when you're the defense.
No, you're
Another
supposed to be
witness.
nice, Lacey.
Another witness called by the defense was Gary Bolton, a friend of Michael's, who testified that Michael was a truthful and non-violent person. Bolton said that he never had a chance during the trial to answer questions about Michael's character, so nobody asked him.
That is sad.
So this was just one of several appeals filed, all resulting in his conviction being upheld. And then last thing of note is an interesting but sad fact. Jerry's brother's granddaughter, so Doug's granddaughter, her name was Bryce, and she was born on the day that Jerry died.
Yeah.
And that is the tale of Uncle Jerry Boggs
Gotcha.
and Jill Coit and her eight marriages.
Well, I enjoyed it.
Enjoyed laughing at Jill, but I will miss Jerry.
I'm glad that Jerry got justice. I'm sad that William Coit Jr. did not.
Yeah.
But I feel like everybody kind of knows what happened to William Coit Jr.
Yeah. I mean, it might just be that thing that they're like, she did it, we know she did it, but we don't want to like waste the taxpayers' money by like dragging out a trial.
Yeah, and if nobody's like pushing for
Yeah.
that, like no family is harassing
Well,
them.
maybe her son is just like come to terms, like because it sounds like he already thought it, so yeah. Oh, Jill.
Well, that
All
was
right.
sinister.
And we were sarcastic, a lot at Jill's expense.
And we hope you keep listening.